Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from SIRI, an Alaska Native corporation with operations and investments spanning 5 continents, 45 states, and 2 U.S. territories.
I've never seen a more thorough and complete search for a missing person during my career.
A missing 7-year-old from Kodiak is found dead a few miles from his home. From Alaska Public Media, this is Statewide News on Alaska News Nightly for Monday, May 16th. Good evening, I'm Casey Grove. Also tonight, liberal-leaning Alaska voters worry about splitting the vote in a crowded special primary to fill Don Young's seat.
With 48 people, it's just too complicated to strategize our way into the general.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
If you are a hunter, birder, or outdoor enthusiast, the U.S. Geological Survey is asking for help tracking the bird populations in Alaska. The USGS manages a nationwide bird banding program, and every year, thousands of birds are marked with small, numbered leg bands. If you see, find, or harvest a banded bird, please report the band number online at reportband.gov. The information provided will help inform how bird populations may be changing. This message sponsored by the USGS Alaska Science Center.
The body of 7-year-old Sawyer Sipola, who went missing near his home off Menashka Bay Road in Kodiak more than a week ago, was found on Pillar Mountain on Sunday, according to the Alaska State Troopers. KMXD's Kirsten Dobroth reports.
Sipola's body was discovered by 2 adults recreating in the Pillar Mountain area on Sunday afternoon, according to an emailed statement from the Alaska Department of Public Safety. No obvious signs of foul play were identified at the scene, according to the release. Agents from the Federal Bureau of Investigation had also not uncovered any evidence of foul play during their time on the island last week, according to the Alaska State Troopers. Sipola was autistic, and in the week he went missing, more than 2,000 volunteers canvassed 10,000 acres of steep and rugged terrain across the island looking for the boy. Alaska Wildlife Trooper Josh Boyle was the incident commander for the search. He spoke at a press conference on the case held the day before Sipola's remains were found.
It was both humbling and awe-inspiring to see the magnitude of generosity displayed over this last week, truly defining what it means to be a community and a family coming together in a time of tragedy.
Boyle said local businesses donated flashlights, bear spray, and food and water for searchers. The search effort also included Kodiak Island Search and Rescue, Coast Guard Base Kodiak, U.S. Navy SEALs, and local pilots. Canine teams were also flown in from across the state to assist in the search. Lieutenant Paul Fussy is the Alaska State Troopers statewide coordinator for search and rescue.
As a SAR coordinator for the state and as Alaska State Trooper for over 20 years, I've never seen a more thorough and complete search for a missing person during my career.
The investigation into what happened to Sipola is ongoing, according to the DPS statement. Meanwhile, in an emailed letter to parents, Kodiak Island Borough School District Superintendent Larry Ledoux said counselors would be available for students who need support throughout the week. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobroth.
The Alaska House voted Saturday against accepting a state spending package passed by the Senate that included payments of about $5,500 to residents. The vote to concur with the Senate package failed, with 18 members in favor of accepting the Senate plan and 22 against. The vote sets the stage for a conference committee, with the regular legislative session set to end by Wednesday. In a conference committee, negotiators from the House and Senate are tasked with hashing out differences between the budgets that passed each chamber. The House, in its version of the budget, included a permanent fund dividend of about $1,250, plus a $1,300 energy relief check. The Alaska Senate passed a bill Friday that would recognize the state's 229 federally recognized tribes. If Governor Mike Dunleavy signs the bill, the state would recognize Alaska's tribes the same way the federal government does, as sovereign nations. Bethel Democratic Representative Tiffany Zolkuski introduced the bill. It passed in the House, but it sat in the Senate State Affairs Committee since February. In the meantime, a ballot initiative was started by Alaskans concerned about a lack of formal state recognition of the tribes in Alaska. City and Borough of Juneau Assembly member Wasal Gidak Barbara Blake is one of 3 co-chairs of the ballot initiative, which aims to do the same thing as the bill.
the reason that it meant so much to all of us was to tell Alaskans and to tell all of our people that yes, the state does in fact care about our tribes, the original sovereigns of this place, recognizes our sophisticated form of government that we've always held.
Blake says the bill may put an end to legal battles between the state of Alaska and tribes. There have been multiple legal and jurisdictional questions between tribes and the state that have led to costly lawsuits.
And also sends a message to the world that they would like to have a better working relationship with our Native people and our Native entities and grow that so that we can do a better job taking care of every citizen of Alaska.
Because of a Senate amendment, the bill goes back to the House for consideration. It's expected to pass because the House approved the legislation last year. If this bill does not pass before the end of the session, then it will go to voters in the form of a ballot measure. If it does pass, that ballot measure will be canceled. Well, there's angst building among Alaska's liberals as they contemplate the special primary election to fill the remainder of the late Congressman Don Young's term. That's the race with 48 candidates. In the first ever state election by mail, the list will be narrowed to 4 candidates. In the Pick One primary, Alaskans on the left have a special concern that's not as acute among conservatives. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports.
Leia Berman-Williams is a mathematician on the faculty at the University of Alaska Fairbanks. She's a Democrat and for weeks could not decide which candidate to vote for.
There are 5 or 6 that I think would be excellent. Are any of those candidates going to make it through the gauntlet of the primary? And should I be even bothering to think strategically?
Williams is looking forward to the special general election in August when she'll have a chance to rank 4 candidates. But in this special primary, she can only choose one. Her concern is that liberal voters will split every which way and none of their candidates will advance.
I worry about that a lot. I have seen no consensus about who sort of, there's no coalescing around a single progressive candidate.
Williams isn't the only one. Democrats and progressives have a smaller share of the Alaska electorate to start with, and they don't want to split it. On social media, you can find them casting about, testing strategic theories, and taking each other's temperature. Vote for Al Gross, some say, because he's got the best name recognition. Others fret that he's not a strong enough contender now that the Democratic Party has broken with him. The far left is drawn to Santa Claus, the North Pole city councilman, for his ideological purity. But some question his viability, since he isn't accepting campaign contributions. Many Democrats like former legislator Mary Peltola, but worry labor voters won't forgive her 2005 vote to cut teacher retirement. They also like Anchorage Assemblyman Chris Constant, but wonder if he's got statewide appeal. And so it goes. What progressive voters fear is squandering their votes and allowing 4 conservatives to advance. Pollster Ivan Moore says there's not much chance of a shutout by either side. He recently conducted a poll not commissioned by any candidate or campaign. Let's start with Moore's caveats.
I hate to say this, but to a certain extent, you got to take things with a pinch of salt because there'll be a lot of jumping around, right? This really is snapshot in time.
So for what it's worth, his poll showed Republicans Sarah Palin and Nick Begich were leading the pack, followed by Gross. After those 3, a lot of candidates were bunched in the middle. Looking at the top 5 Republican candidates, Moore says it's not clear more than 2 will advance.
So most of the Republicans have gone over and are voting for 1 of Sarah Palin or Begich, and that doesn't leave much for the other 3. So it's going to be tough for them.
If Moore is right about that, the concentration of Republican votes on just 2 candidates virtually assures that conservatives can't be shut out. And it leaves room for as many as 2 non-Republicans to advance. And yet, the liberal angst is real. Anchorage healthcare professional Carrie Harris feels it.
I really like Chris Constant. I really like Mary Peltola and Santa Claus.
Harris says she's listening to friends and people on social media whose opinion she values to learn more, and she plans to vote strategically. As for Williams, the mathematician in Fairbanks, she gave up on working the numbers and just chose the candidate she likes best.
I think the primary with 48 people, it's just too complicated to try to be trying to strategize our way into the general.
Williams filled in the oval for Peltola, added the necessary signatures, and dropped her ballot in the mail. For voters still deciding, ballots must be postmarked by June 11. Reporting from Anchorage, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, deep snowpack in the interior last winter led to an increase in wildlife deaths.
We documented 60 bison mortalities over the winter, and that's certainly way, way, way above average.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
Parents, did you know that 1 out of 4 Alaska high school students currently use e-cigarettes? E-cigarettes are easy to use and easy to hide. What teens breathe in and out from e-cigarettes is not safe. It contains cancer-causing chemicals, toxic metals, and nicotine. Nicotine can lead to addiction. It can harm brain development and hurt memory, learning, and attention span. Parents, talk to your teens about vaping. Visit livevapefree at alaskaquitline.com. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Quitline.
The dispatch center that handles 911 calls for a large area of the interior is restructuring operations to provide relief for overworked staff. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
The City of Fairbanks-run Emergency Communications Center answers 911 calls from around the interior and dispatches first responders from 21 police, fire, and EMS departments from Fairbanks and North Pole to Nenana, the Denali Borough, and Delta Junction. Center manager Christy Meredith says the operation is struggling to recover from a slow transition from in-person to online dispatcher training forced by the pandemic.
It took them about 6 months to come up with how they were going to do that, and then we were able to hire people, but it has still affected us a lot.
Meredith says 12 of the center's 17 and a half dispatcher positions are currently filled, and 2 of those employees are in training. She says the situation requires dispatchers to routinely work 12 hours a day, 6 days a week, or more.
The way it has worked for the last couple of years, there's a lot of mandatory overtime.
Meredith says the schedule and stressful nature of the job take a toll.
There are quite a few of them that have come to me and said, I don't know how much more of this I can take. Their personal lives are suffering. They don't have relationships. They're just trying to go home and go to sleep so they can come back again.
In an effort to provide a better work-life balance for dispatchers, Meredith says the center is transitioning to a 4 days on, 4 days off, 12-hour-a-day schedule and reducing the number of dispatchers on duty.
We are going to drop our manning to 2 dispatchers instead of 3 on a shift. And the third person is going to be a call taker. So it'll be a little less training in the room, but it will give people a little more time off.
In a presentation to the Fairbanks City Council at a meeting Monday, Meredith said the new arrangement will result in delays.
People will be on hold waiting for somebody to answer the phone longer. This will mean that officers will be put on hold and wait a little bit longer for the dispatcher to be able to cover their traffic. Same thing with the fire departments. There will be a delay in what we're doing because we can only cover so much at a time.
Meanwhile, the city is actively trying to fill the open dispatcher positions. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Now that last winter's heavy snowpack is finally melting away, wildlife biologists in the eastern interior are getting a better idea of how many moose and bison starve to death because of the lack of forage. Meanwhile, several area residents are trying to get rid of the carcasses of winter kills that until now have been covered up by snow. KUAC's Tim Ellis reports.
Katie Behrens says a few weeks ago she noticed the cow moose that had been hanging around her house near Delta Junction since early last winter was getting weaker as it scrounged around her yard every day for something to eat because its usual forage was buried under several feet of snow and ice.
She was trying to eat shrubs and stuff that she could reach. It was very thin. She couldn't walk. She was so weak the last week before she died. She couldn't get up.
Barron's says a couple of weeks ago she covered the carcass with a tarp and a couple of feet of snow. But last week she got the first whiff of the decaying animal, so she got a friend with a piece of heavy equipment called a front end loader to scoop up the carcass and bury it out in the woods.
Luckily, he moved it before it started to smell too bad. It was just starting to get ripe.
Delta Area State Fish and Game wildlife biologist Clint Cooper says it's a problem that several locals have had to deal with this spring.
Around town here, we had a lot of cases of dead moose earlier in the wintertime, and some of those moose now are showing up as the snow melts.
Cooper says he and other biologists are trying to figure out how much of the area's moose population died over the winter. He says it appears that more cows and calves than usual didn't make it, so the agency canceled a recent antlerless moose hunt in Game Management Unit 20D. But he doesn't think the winter kills will affect this fall's hunting season.
Definitely, we had some higher than normal mortality from what we've seen so far. But it doesn't appear to be that bad.
Cooper says the local bison population, on the other hand, definitely took a big hit.
We have documented 60 bison mortalities over the winter that we're aware of, and that's certainly way, way, way above average.
That's about a fifth of the 300-head Delta bison herd. Cooper says most of those that died were calves, along with a few yearlings. And he says more than a dozen were killed when they were hit by vehicles because the animals were using roads in lieu of their usual trails, which were covered by deep snow and ice. But he says the herd is overall in good shape, so the fall bison hunt is still a go.
We had a healthy population of bison, still have a healthy population of bison.
Cooper says now that the snow is melting, the bison are ranging back to their summer calving areas to the south, off to the west of Black Rapids.
They're definitely on the move. I did a flight last week, and about half the bison observed were present on their calving ground, which is down along the Delta River.
Cooper said Wednesday he's still getting reports of dead bison and moose around the Delta area. He says there's not much he can do but advise residents to remove the carcasses and bury them somewhere far from human inhabited areas, including trails, because he says all that protein is going to attract bears and other scavengers. In Delta, I'm Tim Ellis.
Millions of dollars in federal fishery disaster funding has been allocated to the Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers for low salmon runs over the past 2 years. Now, the State Department of Fish and Game is charged with creating a plan for how to spend that money. The department held a meeting last week to gather public input on the plan. KYUK's Anna Rose MacArthur reports the roughly dozen people from the Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers who testified presented a unified message: give the money to the people living along the rivers.
The people who testified made it clear money is no replacement for salmon, but it helps.
The monetary value of subsistence, it's hard to put a price on that because it's not only the value of the fish, but the value of the cultural relevance that is being lost.
Serena Fitka is the executive director of the Yukon River Drainage Fisheries Association. Salmon runs have remained low on the river for years. The Yukon River has received at least two other salmon fisheries disaster declarations in the past decade. Last year, record low salmon runs prevented any subsistence or commercial fishing, and runs are expected to remain low this summer.
With the high costs of living in these rural communities, and the gas prices skyrocketing, the communities are going to be hit hard this year. And we're looking at another year where closures are going to be put in place, another year where people's freezers are going to be empty.
The Yukon and Kuskokwim River residents who called into the meeting hope this funding can offset some of those costs. The callers, like Nabuskiak Tribal Council member Stephen Maxey, advocated for giving the funding directly to the people living on the rivers who are unable to fish for salmon.
Disaster money should go directly to the people, to the individual people that live in the region that are affected. We don't need all this money or part of the money going to the nonprofits. The nonprofits eat up the money. The study groups eat up the money. We are too studied enough.
However, others did advocate for funding for salmon research in addition to individual payments to subsistence users. Callers like Mike Williams Sr., who chairs the Kuskokwim River Intertribal Fish Commission, which represents the river's 33 tribes, and he says that the research should involve the tribes.
And that we make sure that all of the factors are researched in why the salmon are not returning as they used in the past.
Federal fishery disaster funding takes a long time to reach its destination. Even though the funding is for low salmon runs in 2020 and 2021, the money will likely not become available for at least another year, until 2023. Also, the money will be split across six Alaska fisheries. The U.S. Department of Commerce allocated nearly $56 million for Alaska salmon fishery disasters that occurred in 2020. That includes fisheries in the Yukon River, Kuskokwim River, Norton Sound, Chinik, and Southeast Alaska. It also includes the 2021 Yukon River salmon fishery. So that nearly $56 million has to be spread widely. The State Department of Fish and Game is accepting emailed public comments on how to spend this funding. The deadline is June 15th. You can send your comments to email address dfg.com.fisheriesdisasters@alaska.gov. For KYUK, I'm Anna Rose MacArthur.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by
Princess Lodges, offering glass-domed railcar tours to Talkeetna and Denali National Park for Alaska summer adventures. Your journey begins at princesslodges.com. NEA Alaska is a professional education association representing over 11,000 of Alaska's dedicated public school employees. NEA Alaska members are united in their commitment to provide an excellent education for every student, regardless of background or zip code. Together, NEA Alaska members work with colleagues, parents, and their communities to build strong public schools that are productive, safe, and welcoming to all. Learn more at neaalaska.org and help NEA Alaska reach, teach, and inspire all Alaska students. This message sponsored by NEA Alaska.
Alaska reported its first cases of the highly pathogenic avian influenza on May 3rd, furthering the spread of what is now an international bird flu epidemic. In response to the rising number of cases, the Alaska Raptor Center in Sitka is temporarily suspending its bird rescue and rehabilitation services. Jennifer Cedarleaf is the avian director at the center.
They're saying like 99% chance that raptors that get it will die. So we are doing everything we can to protect them.
Bird flu is spread through contact with saliva or feces of an infected bird. Cedarleaf says they've moved the eagles that live in the outdoor habitat into their cages to reduce their risk of exposure to the virus.
Unfortunately, that means that they're not on display for the public to see, but at this point, we're more concerned about the safety of our birds.
Cedarleaf says, unlike COVID, there's no fast test for the avian influenza. It can take up to 2 weeks to get the results from a sample. So far, no cases have been reported in Southeast, but Cedarleaf says an eagle died in the Sitka National Historical Park recently, and they're waiting on test results, which she suspects could come back positive. Cedarleaf says the virus doesn't like warm weather, and she's hopeful that cases will die down nationally once the summer hits. Wrangell High School students designed and painted two pairs of sneakers for an art competition that continue to receive national acclaim. As KSTK's Sage Smiley reports, the shoes already won at least $15,000 for the school's art program and a chance to win more than triple that.
Along Wrangell's front street, almost every storefront has the same sign. Vote to help win $50,000 for the WHS art program, it says. The signs have pictures of two pairs of painted Vans shoes as well.
I'm so excited. I'm just,
Paige Baggin led the group of Wrangell art students that entered this year's Vans Custom Culture Contest, where high schools design shoes to represent hometown pride and the legacy of one of the Vans founders. The endeavor paid off. Rangel was first accepted into a group of 250 competing schools, then the top 50 schools nationwide, and after a public vote, made the top 5 designs in the United States. The 2 pairs of shoes, one pair with Rangel sunset scenes, another with Klinkit-inspired formline art, beading, marten fur, and buttons, are proudly displayed in the window of a downtown Rangel business. Former Rangel students and community members spread the voting link coast to coast. Southeast regional native corporation Sea Alaska and Alaska-based rock band Portugal the Man shared Rangel's shoe designs. News organizations all over the state shared stories about Rangel's shoes. Some students even got to meet U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski, who posted a video with them on her social media. The students say they feel like Rangel's success in this nationwide competition is an underdog story. Some of the top 50 schools came from communities of hundreds of thousands of people. Generously, Rangel has about 2,300 people on the whole island. Here's senior Rowan Wiederspoon.
It's great to see that even with a small community, you can win a people's vote. Because it really just shows that like all you really have to do to succeed in life is to try.
Art teacher Tasha Morse agrees.
You have to dare to try. You have to dare to make mistakes. You have to put your neck out there. And that's what all of us have done. Like nationwide, to be in the top 5 is astronomical. We have a high school population of 62 children. And that is not much.
She says when she got the email that Rangel made the top 5 schools, she burst into tears.
Really exciting, completely surreal. This is probably like the most surreal thing that's ever happened in my life. Like these kinds of things happen to other people. Other people go on game shows and win money. Other people win contests. Other people do this. It's not something that happens to people like us here in Rangel. You know, it just feels really surreal.
As one of the top 5 schools in the Vans Custom Culture competition this year, Rangel has already won $15,000 for its art program and is in the running to win a $50,000 grand prize. Baggin, the lead artist for the shoes, says she doesn't feel like it's a competition, really, now that they've made the top 5 schools.
We get $500 a year. If we wanted to save up $15,000, it would take us 30 years. So having this much money right now is like literally a dream come true. It's crazy for us.
Teachers in Rangel are allotted $500 each year to buy classroom supplies.
I was reading all the impact documents from the other schools, and they were like, we're going to build a new computer lab filled with iMacs, and we're going to create a new department and blah, blah, blah. And we don't, like, we set out being like, oh, I hope we get some money so we can buy some new paints. Or like some new paintbrushes.
Colored pencils.
High school senior Sophia Hagelman says one of the best parts is the opportunity to feel like they're giving back to the school in a meaningful way.
I've seen where teachers had to buy, with their personal money, have to buy new products and items that the school just can't afford. So this would be really good to have because then they don't have to use all their personal money on things they shouldn't have to buy.
The top school will also win a visit from Vans officials and a school-wide barbecue, among other prizes. In Rangel, I'm Sage Smiley.
The grand prize winner for the Vans High School Custom Culture Competition is scheduled to be announced this week. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Kirsten Dobroth in Kodiak, Yvonne Crumry in Juneau, Liz Ruskin in Anchorage, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Tim Ellis in Delta Junction, Anna Rose MacArthur in Bethel, Catherine Rose in Sitka, and Sage Smiley in Rangel. Our audio engineer is Tobin Shelby. Annie Fite produced tonight's show, and I'm Casey Grove. Good night.
On June 11th, Alaska will have the first round of a special election to fill the open seat in Congress. Every Alaskan voter will receive a ballot in the mail. In the June 11th primary, you can only vote for one person. The ranking happens later. Pick your favorite candidate, sign, and get a friend to sign as well. Then mail it back. And remember that June 11th is the Pick One primary. This message sponsored by Alaskans for Better Elections.
This is Statewide News on Alaska Public Media.